You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 25th, 2010. This is episode 146, Wells Tech Road Trip, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Florida. We are back again with another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs, your host for some 146 episodes, and right by my side as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you yet again this morning and enjoying a little bit of a cooler temperature stream here in Sleepy Eye. Hope to send it your direction soon.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a few nice days here. So how was Buttered Corn Day?
Oh, it was awesome. We serve up all the buttered corn you can eat here in Sleepy Eye each year, and our church actually has a homemade pie stand right next to the buttered corn serving. So we made 88 homemade pies at St. John's in Sleepy Eye this year and sold all but about six of them by the slice. So that's pretty impressive.
That is
impressive. A lot of pie.
So is there a parade of some sort as well?
There is. On Saturday night, we had a huge parade. I want to say there were about 80 units in the parade.
Mm-hmm. And was your church in it?
We did have a float. We were Noah's Ark float. We had this awesome ark that actually came from St. Paul's in New Ulm. They had used in previous parades. And my husband dressed up as Noah and walked the parade route, giving out little animals in the form of erasers. And
I hope you got some pictures.
We did, and we had free watermelon at church afterwards. So it was a lot of fun.
So was that the VBS theme, Noah's Ark? Something
it
like
was.
That? Okay.
Yep.
That tied in nicely then.
Yeah.
Very cool. Great. Sounds like a great event for a town to be able to do something that a town that small to do something that kind of that big is really cool.
Yeah, we had people from all over. You know, the word gets out in southern Minnesota. They come from a distance to eat that good buttered corn. Mm-hmm. So
we need to wrap up our road trip, correct? Today is the last day of our Wells Tech road trip. Where are we headed today?
Well, we have a multi-destination today. We're actually talking to three people in three different states. We're going to Michigan to talk with Pastor Aaron Fry, president of Michigan Lutheran Seminary, and on to Pennsylvania to include Pastor Steve Bauer, and finally down to Florida, sunny Florida, to Pastor Dan Witte at Risen Savior there in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. So wonderful opportunity to talk to three different states, and the topic was?
We wrestled up these three guys to talk about Bible study software. And two of these guys we've had on talking about their particular software of choice. And then we brought in my brother-in-law, Dan, to talk about PC?
It's Bible Works.
Bible Works. I think it's had a couple different names. So, and we had a cage match. No, we didn't.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it that.
No, I didn't get that extreme. But they definitely shared with us the reasons that they use the tools that they do, and these are it's a very personal choice, and I think anybody listening to the interview will probably come out with a good idea of what the strengths and weaknesses of each package are, and maybe some motivation to dig into whatever package they happen to be using, or if they're in the market. I think they've got some great suggestions there based on what their needs might be.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this interview. It was great to listen to these guys. You can tell that the Bible study software is a huge tool for them and in their ministry responsibilities. And once they get going, boy, watch out, because they get really, really excited about some of this technical stuff.
Yeah, you and I just kind of stayed out of the way. So
they
did a great job. We really appreciate them. So let's
definitely.
Let's take a listen to the interview with Aaron Fry, Steve Bauer, and Dan Witte on Bible software. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is a whole host of, I won't call them characters, they're actually Lutheran pastors, and of course Sally. We have Aaron Fry, Steve Bauer, and Dan Witte. And we're going to be talking a little Bible software. So maybe let's just do a quick round table, and we'll start with Aaron, you want to start? Tell us who you are.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Aaron Fry. Until March of this year, I had been serving as a pastor in Tawa City, and now I'm serving as president at Michigan Lutheran Seminary in Saginaw, Michigan. I had become connected with Lugus Bible Software back in 92, 93, when I was doing an article on Bible software back in college for everyone at Northwestern, and discovered Lugus as one of the few packages, actually the only package on the market at the time, that had both Greek and Hebrew fully available on the screen and had a license to the NIV. And since then, I've followed it pretty closely, and it's been my main package.
Mm-hmm. Steve, you want to go next?
Sure. Steve Bauer, my first call out of the seminary was to St. Peter in Fort Collins, Colorado. And for, I don't know, 3.5 years or so, I've been over here in West Newton, Pennsylvania at Faith Lutheran Church. In my vicar year, I first started using Accordant. I bought my first Mac laptop and tossed my PC behind me, and in the process had to ask the question, well, is there any software out there that, you know, for Bible preparation and sermons and Bible studies and all of that? And then I thankfully found Accordant, and you know, I guess I was about a decade ago, and went this direction and never looked back.
So was that a veiled reference to get thee behind me, Satan? Yeah, you know, when you toss the PC behind you.
Yeah, get me behind me. No, I mean, I think I told you guys before. My vicar year, leading into that, I had some seriously bad like PC problems with Trojan horses and hard drive crashes and trying to rebuild stuff that was unrebuildable, and all these bad things that had tied themselves into the registry that I couldn't dig out. And finally, I said, enough with this. I'm going to go a different direction. And so I did. And I'm very content with that. So, yeah, that's what I meant. Not as much a veiled reference.
There was no scriptural reference there. Gotcha.
Okay.
All right. Dan.
I'm Dan Witte. I'm a Wells pastor in Lakewood Ranch, Florida, a little south of Tampa. I was pastor before, from 92 to 2001, in Downers Grove, Illinois, at Good Shepherd. And that's when I started using what is now called BibleWorks. At that point, some people with long memories would remember a program called Hermeneutica with a K. I started using BibleWorks because I was switching from a computer that was still basically a DOS-based computer. That makes me older than the other two interviewees here, I fear. But what are you going to do when your QuickVerse for DOS no longer does what you want it to do, and you'd like to do Greek and Hebrew, like Aaron was saying? And like, just like Aaron, I think I figured that there were two programs out there, Lugus, Libronix, and what was Hermeneutica, or then BibleWorks, and just pretty much took a guess. I don't know, this one, the price looks right, and I've been using it ever since. I've been using it since about 1999 for sermons and Bible classes and personal Bible study, and you name it. I'm very tied to it, as I know the other guys are too. It just becomes almost like the Bible you carry with you. It's very important to the way you think and the way you organize your stuff and how you answer questions, all sorts of stuff.
Very good. Thanks. So we have three districts actually represented. We have the Michigan District, of course. We have
two districts.
Two? North Atlantic? You're not in North Atlantic?
No. I'm part of the proud Michigan District.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that, Dan. You're a little bit outnumbered.
I am.
Well, I learned something I did not know. So is all of Pennsylvania in Michigan or just part of it?
No, there's four congregations in Pennsylvania. The two in the west are in the Michigan District, and the two in the east are in the North Atlantic.
Aha! Okay. Little bonus.
Yeah, there are always talks about breaking away and forming our own district.
I can totally understand those, yes.
And the house divided against itself cannot stand, that sort of a thing.
All right.
All right. Well, we don't. The reason that we've gathered you all together is not to have kind of a holy war of Bible software, but just kind of an honest comparison, so that somebody in the market who is maybe interested, whether they be pastor or teacher, even a layperson, would have kind of an idea from those people that are using the software day in and day out. We've talked with two of you already on the show about your particular packages, so we wanted just to kind of get a balanced conversation going. So maybe the first question to get us going is what if you had to pick your top three must-haves as you were considering Bible software, back in the day when you were looking at the options, what are those top three things that you really had to have for this thing to be worth your time and your money? And maybe we can go in reverse order at this point. Dan, you want to start with your top three?
Sure. I probably mentioned it somewhat already, and it'll sound very old, but one was that it was going to run Windows and not DOS.
Mm-hmm.
will it have Greek and Hebrew on the screen, and will it allow me to copy and paste those into word processing if I'm working on something for other brothers in a conference or the like? Can I search on strings and words? The concordance features of any of these Bible programs is amazing. Can I keep the Greek and Hebrew in front of me? That's the main thing I've noticed and I wanted, and it really is a difference as opposed to having your English Bible in front of you, to have the original in front of you and resources with it, where you can quickly parse a word or quickly look up a definition, and you use your Greek and Hebrew more, I think, when you have a program like any of these three in front of you regularly. It keeps you thinking about what the actual text says, mm-hmm. for those of us that have the training and the responsibility to do that.
So when you have the Greek and Hebrew in front of you, are they all hyperlinked to other windows on the same screen? So if you've got a lexicon or something else that's related to a word or a word study, is it synced that way?
Yeah, I'm a little bit more familiar with Logos than with Accordance. Bible Works itself, a lot of it is just passing your mouse over a particular Greek or Hebrew word,
mm-hmm.
and a little dialog box will pop up with a simple gloss, with a simple definition, mm-hmm. of the word, and then there's another window where you can search any number of lexicons, some of them coming with the program, some of them if you bought extra. That was another thing, actually, that led me to my works and to stay with it, is you come to realize, okay, the major lexica are now, for Greek, the Bauer, Denker, Art, Gingrich, the BDAG,
mm-hmm.
and for Greek, or for Hebrew and Aramaic, rather, the old standard is Brown, Driver, Briggs, BDB, and then the one that is also cited a lot in commentaries, etc., is called the Hebrew Aramaic Lexicon of the Old Testament, or HALOT.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it awfully useful when you're doing some more in-depth study to be able to have things like that right at your fingertips in another window right on the same screen that you can search for. Often those major lexica will be, those major dictionaries are citing almost any verse you might be translating. They're giving you their particular nuance for that verse.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful as you translate it and say, well, a whole bunch of other scholars looked at this and they came down on this. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily right, but you've got pretty much the up-to-date consensus.
Right. Good. Steve, you want to take your view, your top three on Accordance?
Sure. These aren't really in any, categorical order. These are just the three that I thought were important.
Mm-hmm.
One is efficiency. Shouldn't add time. And what I mean by that is there are guys out there that still use all hardback and notebook and binders and stuff when they do their tech studies, and if that works for them, that's great. One of my big things is if it takes more time for you to use the software package than it does to just take out your stuff and write it in a notebook, then why bother?
Mm-hmm.
And it might seem kind of common sense, but in some cases it's not. The other was accuracy. I was looking especially to make sure that the tags, the syntax tags, present, active, perfect, third person singular, those types of taggings, that they were correct. And where there were options, they would also list the options. If it was a verb that was passive or active, it would list those options instead of sort of throwing it into one box. That was another criteria that I had. Mm-hmm. And the third was accessibility. And what I mean by that is after I do my tech study, the next time it pops up, you know, because we as pastors, you know, there's some tech, you know, Palm Sunday, you know, you're going to have Palm Sunday pop up a whole lot, and it'll be the same text usually year after year. And so you, it's nice to have all of those notes right then and there that you had for your tech study, so you can just pick up from there and build on it without putting more work into the basic text structure part of it. And that's what I looked at as far as software packages and applications. That's what I thought the essentials were. All of the other stuff, what does it look like on the screen? Can you export it to Unicode or other fonts? Mm-hmm. Can you diagram the sentences? Does it have a fancy looking atlas with it or timeline? You know, whoopee. The big thing is it able to save time? Right. Is it accurate? And is it accessible later on?
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you were on the PC, obviously, before the Mac. Did you have Bible software when you were on the PC side?
Sure. I now, again, going back, this was at least a decade ago. So for both BibleWorks and Logos, it would not surprise me if they have grown significantly since then. I started out with Logos. I don't even know what version that was back in 2001. Uh-huh. And it was I found that just to parse a word, I had to open 2, 3, or 4 different windows, and then once I parsed the word, there was no way to get it into some sort of notes within the program. And so I actually then I went and I bought BibleWorks, and I thought it was a whole lot more, as far as the interface goes. It was a whole lot more usable, but then I had the same dilemma of, okay, I got this wonderful information here. How do I get it into a format that I can use? So I started dumping it into Word files, which just really wasn't convenient because I wanted it all together on my screen in the same application. And then in accordance, I found out that verse by verse by verse, they have these what they call user notes, and there's a little database associated with each verse, and you know, so as a result, then I could do exegesis of a verse, and then whenever I would look up that verse, it would have those notes aligned right along with it. Now again, I have no doubt that that both of those applications have grown in the decades since I touched them. As I said, I use them and grew frustrated, and then tossed them behind me. So that's my experience. Sure. with by comparison.
Dan, going back to you, just to respond a little bit to Steve's his noted shortcoming of BibleWorks, is that now an available feature where you can add your own notes, and that goes along for the ride there?
Yes, and that's I would say Steve's exactly right about the benefit of that, and his timing, as my knowledge of the program and use of it in the past, I agree with him that in the past that was a weakness. I didn't use the program in that way for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
That was version 6 and prior. BibleWorks right now is at version 8, and they changed a bunch of things. I would get 6 to crash when I would try to take a note.
Okay, not a feature.
Not a feature. It's an undocumented feature. So 7, I do that, just what Steve's talking about, and 8 does it even better, I'm told. But there's ways to take a verse, and every time you look at that chapter, that verse, it comes up. There's a separate editor. I've had to reload the program, and I found that was one of my main concerns. How do I get those notes back?
Mm-hmm.
The hard drive just died. Now what am I going to do? And I found it very easy to go get that file, and put it back in that directory.
Cool.
And boom, I had all my notes again. I should ask Aaron the same question, but I think Steve hit the nail on the head about past problems and present comparability of the three.
Very good. Thanks. And waiting very patiently, Aaron, talk to us about Logos and your top three.
Right. Yeah, I think I mentioned when I introduced myself that, you know, the things that attracted me to Logos in the first place was, you know, back in '93, there was really only one package that besides the basic searching functions. Could also display Greek and Hebrew on the screen, and had rights to the kinds of books that I knew I needed to use. And you know, I was thinking more in terms of I want a long-term relationship with the Bible software, just like they always told us in school. You find one paper Bible that you want to work with, and you buy 10 copies. That's what they used to tell us in school. And as soon as you store 9 of them, and you use one until it wears out, and then you get the next one out, and you copy the notes into it, and then you move on from there. So I thought, I want the Bible software equivalent of that, because I know Bible software is much more powerful in terms of Accordance and Bible Works, getting all that stuff in front of you, being able to see it, and then being able to access those notes in the future. So, I went with Lugus in 93, and I've tried to keep an eye on the other software packages in the market. And what's kept me with Lugus more than anything else, I think, is the available library that you can get. Northwestern Publishing books, you can get Concordia Publishing books, you can get free books, although you can get more free books with other packages currently, because they'll use more standard publishing formats. However, that is changing for Lugus. There are a large number of free books that people have produced, and there will be even more now. It's something that's changing in Lugus now, because they're going with a free book editor now. But that's still coming yet. Nonetheless, quite a few available in that package. Notes was a really big deal for me. Like Steve was saying, I wanted to be able to have notes, take notes. When stuff was available. I don't know what Steve was having trouble with in 2001, but I had been doing that since 93. Although I can take a guess, not everything is always obvious. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I kind of learn the stuff and. I'd say Lugus's big weaknesses over the years all revolved around the fact that they were trying to publish software that would work with as wide an audience as possible. So they were interested in getting the guys, like the other two guys and me, that wanted to use Greek and Hebrew and take notes on Greek and Hebrew and do that intense exegesis. But they also wanted to attract the layperson who just wanted to type a Bible passage in and hit the go button. And that just means that sometimes when you use the higher end features, you have to kind of put them together in ways that the documentation doesn't immediately make obvious to you, because everything is geared towards somebody who just walks up to the software and wants a lot of information but doesn't necessarily have a background in biblical scholarship. Nonetheless, with all the higher end features, I've never been disappointed with them, and I've always been able to put them together in such a way that they've accomplished my goals.
So all of that sounds really positive. You guys have built up the software really well. I'm just wondering if there's anything that you would like to see improved about the particular software that you use. Something you might ask the programmers to add to the software or change about it.
We'll take volunteers.
Sorry, you want to go in reverse order again?
Go ahead. Why don't we let Steve go? He's been the middle guy.
There's nothing I would improve. It's absolutely perfect all the time. No. One of the best features, and in my opinion also the worst features of Accordance, is what they call user tools. What you can do is you can import your own stuff into Accordance, and then it's indexed, and you can search it by Greek, Hebrew, a scripture verse, just normal text as well. As an example, I took our dogmatics notes from the seminary and made those into a user tool. Which is great, which is wonderful stuff. I use it all. My dogmatics notes, I keep going back to those again and again and again. And this way I can actually get at it instead of having to page through, the 1,000 or whatever pages of hard copy. Mm-hmm. The downside is that the the editor for it is it's immature, to put it simply, mm-hmm. in two ways. It does crash. And the other way is you can't add some more of the fancier things like tables and some more other what we would expect to add, you know, tables and those sorts of indented outline structure, that sort mm-hmm. of a thing. You know, if you're doing dog notes, would kind of be nice to have, you know, because it's not essentially one fat extended outline. I do use the user tools, and for example, the Planning Christian Worship on the Wells website, I made those into user tools, and it didn't take too much time. But anything more extensive than just a basic flat table, a flat file, is a painful to do. So like I said, a very wonderful feature to have that I don't know if other companies have that sort of a thing, but also you know, I wish that they would work more on making it accessible. Mm-hmm. I think, to give them credit, what they've been wrestling with is if they make it accessible, it's very easy to take a copyrighted e-text and then make it your own user tool. And if you do that, then why do you have to actually buy the why do you have to buy something from Accordance or through mm-hmm. Accordance? You know, I think that might be what they're wrestling with. But nonetheless, like I said, it's both really good and really bad.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thanks. Dan, mm-hmm. you want to take a stab at that question?
Sure. Again, I'm with Steve mostly. I say what a blessing, what a great program. What I do regularly, and what I wonder if the other two packages don't have it too, I read a forum. I go to BibleWorks.com/forums, and I try to keep up with what other guys are asking about and what they are saying they're going to come out with next. So, for example, I just looked this morning, and the main programmer, BibleWorks, much smaller staff, I think, I know, than Lugus, Aaron's told me, and I don't know how it would compare with Accordance, but I think there's only 3 or 4 people running BibleWorks from the office in Virginia where it comes out. But what you get then is some direct access to the programmers, etc. So the one gentleman just wrote that they're working on a very new, robust New Testament textual criticism application, the kind of thing that you'd have in the bottom of the UBS text, the notes, well, this reading says this and this manuscript says that.
Variants, right?
Yeah. Right now, that's a weaker point with BibleWorks. That's one reason Paul Wendland from our seminary had reviewed a package in Lugus. Aaron will have to help us out with the title. It starts with an S, I think, Aaron. But
the Stuttgart Electronic Study Bible.
Right. All the apparatus from Biblia Hebraica, Stuttgartensia, the VHS, the Standard Hebrew Bible, the textual criticism apparatus for that, and the textual criticism apparatus for the UBS text in your Logos application electronically. I suspect that that's available for Accordance too, and it's not right now with
BibleWorks. Correct. Sorry, interject you
go
for
ahead.
A second.
Yeah, go ahead.
With Accordance, they have the Demak Studien Bibel, which is the both the BHS and the apparatus, and then they also have the New Testament, the Nestle Allen apparatus, and excitingly enough, they have the CNTTS database
right.
out of Dallas, which from what I've heard, BibleWorks is going to be getting shortly.
Right, that's the note I just read. That's as soon as they release final product, that's going to be a module for BibleWorks, so you can buy it if you want it, add it on. And they're working on a release, it says, of the first 7 of their own manuscript transcriptions. So they will have transcribed some of the main New Testament manuscripts, Vaticanus and Alexandrinus, if I'm pronouncing it right. So some of the main manuscripts, so that they will be tagged morphologically. That's a big word. They'll be tagged for this. This is a noun. This is a nominative noun. This is a verb. This is a passive verb. All those kind of things that you can search on. Those kind of things. What's going to happen with Hebrew is that VHS came out in 1977, and different books of the Old Testament are coming out book by book with very up-to-date information about all those things, same text but new apparatus. It's called Biblia Hebraica Quinta, BHQ. It's the 5th edition. That's the name. And I'm interested to see what comes with that, too, as far as Hebrew. I know I read a forum a while back where somebody really wanted, for their study, they wanted to see the Dead Sea Scrolls text in their Bible program. They couldn't do it in BibleWorks for the Bible parts of the Dead Sea Scrolls. They could do it for they call them the sectarian
mm-hmm.
so the non-Bible parts that were found at Qumran. But I know there was a man saying in a forum I was reading, I'm switching to Accordance because I can get what I need in Accordance. So it all depends what your study requirements are. Probably most Wells pastors don't desperately need
Qumran
access to the Bible. But somebody working on some kind of a thesis, some kind of in-depth study, might want certain some things. The same with what Aaron said about the books. I like the editor, but if I want to import something of my own, it ends up becoming a Windows help file. And I've corresponded with some people about streamlining that process, how I can do that with some electronic things that I have. Right now, when I want to get the SEMDog notes, I switch to Lugus. And I search in Lugus. BibleWorks has a neat feature where I can right-click on a Bible verse and say, look up this Bible verse in Lugus, so that when I have the SEMDog notes in Luther's Works, for example, in Lugus, it'll do a Bible verse search just on that in Lugus. So I can use the two programs together, but I don't do my Bible stuff in Lugus. I do my library stuff that I have volumes of, but I'm sure others have many more volumes than I do. I basically have Luther's Works and the SEMDog notes and some Wisconsin Lutheran Quarterlies, which does give me quite a bit of information. The Lutheran Confessions too, the Triglot, Kolb Wenger, the update version of our Lutheran Confessions with all the notes and footnotes and such.
So. Well, the Bible software geeks in our audience are in pure heaven right now.
Yeah.
we got three guys just talking the language here. So, Aaron, how about you?
Well, I have been exceptionally satisfied lately. Since the release of Lugus 4, there have really been three major releases, you know, where a lot changed all at once with Lugus. After the initial release of Lugus 1, the switch from 1 to 2 was a pretty big release, and that was in the mid-90s. The next big change was the change from Lugus to Libronix, which happened about 2001. And the Libronix system has recently been revamped, but they didn't change the numbers this time, and they really dropped the Libronix title. And I've gone back to Lugus as the main engine name again, and that's Lugus 4. Pretty much all the stuff that I was complaining about over the years has been fixed with Lugus 4. The notes are way better. The notes actually, while they still have a notes feature that's common with the features of the past, the new way that they've made available to take notes is right inside the reports that you create. So if you're doing your gospel text for the week, you're going to preach on, and you create an exegetical report that lists all of the lexicon entries and the morphological and syntactical data on that text. It will allow you to take your notes on that text right inside the report, either on a word or on a verse or on a hit on a lexicon. And then the next time you do that text, you do a search in that text and create another report. It's the report that you made before that comes up with the notes in it. And that, to me, has been absolutely heaven-sent. The problem, and this is where I would talk to the programmers a little bit more and actually have, but they're probably right to ignore me on this one, since they have a better eye to the future than I do. But when they went from Lugus 3 to 4, they went with a programming model in Windows that's a lot more graphics-intensive and somewhat less text-based in terms of the screen display. And so you do need a higher-end computer now to run the current version of Lugus. But what was nice about that is they changed it so much that if you have Lugus 3 and Lugus 4 running on the system together, they don't even see each other. So you can run them at the same time, and you know, if there's anything I can't get done in Lugus 4, I can turn on Lugus 3. But I haven't turned on Lugus 3 in probably 3-4 months. So I've been pretty happy with it. They've done a fine job with the new version.
Okay.
Can I interject on that?
Sure.
I said to Sally, because I had a webpage for a pastor's conference a while back about both these software programs and free things that are available for guys. So I think maybe Sally can post. I sent her the system requirements for the three programs, because that'll be something for anybody thinking about buying one. I used to think about, is my computer fast enough? Do I have the hard drive space, et cetera?
Yeah, and that's a great point, and maybe raises another one, because there is a cost factor too.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we just quick go around the table and just share ballpark, you know, what do these applications cost, at least in the configurations that you have them in. Aaron, you want to start? Where's Lugus' price point at this point?
Sure. At the seminary, they usually recommend for the students who are there a minimum of a scholar's library. And I'm not up to date on the current deal they get, but I know on the website it's around $600.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, if you're a layperson who's just getting into Bible software, that's not what you pay for Lugus, because that's more Greek and Hebrew stuff than you're going to need.
Right.
But for the basic Bible student who knows exegetical practices and wants those lexica that give you the information you need, that's about where you're going to start.
Okay.
I do recommend, however, the silver package, mm-hmm. Which has a few more Greek and Hebrew tools in it that I think are really important. That's going to bump you up, I don't know, I think 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
Not entirely positive on that, because I basically made my investment in the beginning.
Right.
Whenever they do a major package upgrade, they give you a deal on getting a new library.
Sure.
So I've been building it up a little bit at a time. So every I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I got to dump in about $50 to $100.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Steve, how about Accordance?
Sure. To back up just slightly as far as hardware requirements,
yep.
With Accordance, in my opinion, almost laughably, they love to be backwards compatible. And so you can run, Mac OS, 7 or 8 or 9 mm-hmm. or something on a... for Accordance, and
okay.
So they're very bad. I mean, you can be running an old dinosaur of a computer and still be running some pretty new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the price point, as far as the again, it's I guess I'm surprised at the price of Lugus, because it's pretty much comparable to Accordance. It's not cheap, so I think my initial package was $250. You get the BHS, the Nestle Aland, or the UBS text, or whatever it was, the New Testament, and you get the BDAG, and I think BDB or something like that, and that was about a little over $200. Then you just start adding stuff to it, and depends on what you add to it. Like I added the Leonida, and then Wallace Greek as a grammar, and then Old Testament. I bought the New International Dictionary of Old Testament Exegesis, and then the New Testament version too. Those sorts of lexicons pile up there, and
mm-hmm.
I think over the years, over the decade that I've had Accordance, I probably spent maybe $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not over, maybe about $100 to $200 a year, give or take. I suppose it's about $200 a year. But it's just in my budget. My wife lets me sort of do that for Christmas, and I'm good to go.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it does cost money, but I think by the time you save all that time and your sermons end up being better, and you can actually use and find your tech study after you're done with it, it's a
sure.
good thing.
Yep, it's a tool of trade. Dan, how about BibleWorks?
BibleWorks, I just checked online, full version. Downloaded $349.
Mm-hmm.
BibleWorks, different than Lugus, especially very much trying not to be the library program, but trying to be the Bible program. I've read the main developer saying one thing they're just never going to do is charge for a Bible text per se as a module
mm-hmm.
Translation. So they, if I were going to buy it, if I were an interested seminary student, I think you'd be looking at the $349 plus in the modules. You'd want the BDAG and the HALOT, so that's another $212, so you're at $560 approximately.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to update every 2 years for about $150 at that point. I think of the three, I think BibleWorks is the cheapskate, guys. of the three, the cheapskate guy is going to try to find as much as he can online, maybe. But I think because it offers a little less by way of library, some of the same modules Steve was just mentioning, I could buy two. Some I have, some I haven't. Some it comes with. I don't think we need to go into all that detail. But
right.
Think in terms of $350 or $560.
Okay. So
I think if I could interject there, Martin.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I think what you're really seeing now when you talk about price is the difference in philosophies in the companies, and I think that all the Bible software geeks, you're right, they're in heaven right now, because we're talking about, you know, how the packages compare to each other. When your interest is really in just getting at the meaning of the text, we all get excited about all these packages. We don't care which one anyone is using, so long as they're using something, because you can get so deep. But the philosophy ends up being very different, whereas at BibleWorks, they'll say, I want to charge for these Bibles as modules. Luggis will say, I'll never charge for the engine.
Mm-hmm.
But Luggis will say, you know, I got to work with these publishers, and they are very much focused on the library.
Right.
So since I got to work with these publishers, I got to keep them happy. So I'll focus on them being able to, you know, get their book into Luggis and, you know, and set their price. And we'll just do the engine as part of our business model and not charge for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always charging for a library, not a program. And that's where, when you start asking, you know, what is the price comparison here? That's a much harder question
right.
to answer than you'd think, because
yeah,
they don't really compare apples to apples.
Right. They both have, they all have different, you know, approaches and objectives. And depending on your needs, you know, I think we've got a good sampling of, you know, from every perspective on what they're good at, and it sounds like they're meeting your needs, and you all have similar needs, so it's it sounds like this is a great place and or a great time in the Bible software industry, whereas, you know, maybe 10-15 years ago wasn't as great a place as it is today, and I'm assuming that each they look at each other and they determine, you know, what's going to differentiate them, and competition is good. You know, so if there were only one, you know, player in the game, then that wouldn't be good, you know, for us. So, very good. Sally, you have any other wrap-up questions?
No, I'm just happy to have listened in. You guys are awesome, doing some great work.
Appreciate your time, all of you. Get back to your Bible study. All right. Thanks for your time, guys. Blessings on your ministries, and enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you, and you as well.
Sally, one of the things that came out of that interview was maybe an action item for us is to try and capture all that good stuff and be able to share that permanently on our wiki, and we're going to be working at getting a new wiki page up for Bible study.
That's right. We'll have an official unveiling with the show notes for this episode, but if our listeners have more Bible study resources they want to add to it, that's the beauty of having a Wells Tech Wiki. We invite you to create an account and make this page even better by adding your own ideas, links, comments, whatever it may be.
Yep, very good. And once again, thanks so much to the three guys there for taking some time out of their day to share their thoughts on their favorite Bible study tools. Speaking of tools, we have a few to recommend in our Picks of the Week section. Sally, what's your pick?
Well, this is one that I use actually quite regularly, Martin, and I never have talked about it on the show. It's a website done by Avery. Mm-hmm. Avery, you might be
the label
familiar
people.
With, yeah, they yeah. make all kinds of stick-on labels, and just doing a little bit of reading on it. Their packaging, they may send you to this website to be able to print on your labels. And so one day I decided to try it out, and they have an excellent online tool for printing any kind of label or card that you're interested in. And so you do have to create an account. It's a free account, and the account creation process, you can opt in or opt out of their emails, so you don't have to get any email from them or anything like that if you don't want to. But once you create an account, basically you can search on any of their label numbers. If you purchase any Avery products, it has a label number associated with it, or you can just search through the list and find something that fits your needs. And once you do, then maybe select address labels or business cards or name badges or whatever category it might be, and find something that is the layout that you're looking for, then Avery provides a ton of free graphics and layouts for your particular item. And they're organized by categories, things like children and education, food and hospitality, music and entertainment, legal and government. So you can zero in on the particular type of label or card that you're trying to print, and then you can customize it with your own words and font sizes and font choices as well. So I've used this just time and time again to print labels as well as just to print on regular paper and use their layouts for different things that I have a need. And I think it would be a real valuable thing for anyone working particularly in a church or school office to be able to quickly print labels and have professional looking layouts at your fingertips. So I'd encourage you to check it out if you have that need. Maybe bookmark it in Delicious or Digo so that you can find it in the future when you do have a need.
Yeah, I think this is one of those tools, not very glamorous, but boy, when you need it, you need it. So.
Right, and it does have a real robust library of layouts and designs that are free for the use, and that's one of my favorite price tags.
Great. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Good find.
All right.
My pick is a website called CSS3 Maker, and that is the address as well, CSS3Maker.com. And CSS, we've talked about in the past, it's kind of the de facto standard for web design these days. So, you know, we've kind of moved beyond just the raw HTML and gotten into cascading style sheets to do the formatting or pretty up the pages through what's called CSS. And this is simply code, a little more complicated than, it can be more complicated than HTML and not quite as well known. It hasn't been around as long as HTML, but through CSS you can do all kinds of cool things on a website, and maybe just some basic things as well. For instance, to create a box that you would put text in, the CSS 3.0 Maker allows you to just enter through a WYSIWYG interface the criteria that you'd like to apply. So if you wanted a dashed line around the box, or a double line, or a groove, they call it. You can set the width. You can set the corner radius. So if you wanted rounded corners on your box, you could set text color. There's gradients here, CSS transformations, animations, transitions, text shadows, box shadows, text rotation. What you do is you configure it using sliders and drop-down boxes and get it just the way you want it, and then you click the download button and you will download the CSS code that you can put right in your HTML page or in an external sheet that's referenced in your HTML file. And it's a nice visual way of creating design elements for your website. Final Web is redoing their content management system to make better use of CSS and allow you as a user or a site administrator to tweak a lot of the things in the design all by yourself through CSS. And anybody using any other kind of system probably knows that CSS is the way to make tweaks in the design, whether it be columns or floating images or transitions, those kinds of things. So this is a great tool, free of course, and very easy to use. Just go to css3maker.com and play around with it, and then try some of these things out on your website.
You know, Martin, CSS is something I need to learn a lot more about, so maybe this is a good way for me to get started, even generating some of the code and then reading the code, and, you know, seeing how the selections I made turned into the code. And so really interesting and fun tool.
Nice tool. Yep. All right, moving on to community feedback.
Yeah, we heard from this guy named Martin Spriggs. He had a link to share with us.
I stumbled across this the other day. It's called Avoiding Church Calendar Overload. Most of us are now in the mode where we're trying to build the new church year calendar or the school year calendar. And that sounds pretty straightforward until you get a little bit deeper into what you want to put on the calendar. And do you create two calendars? Do you have three calendars? Who are the audiences? Do you use other means to share events going on in the church or school? And this little blog post does a great job at kind of identifying all the things that maybe you should be thinking about when you're putting together a calendar or trying to advertise events. Talks about things like, what are all the tools at your disposal? And they have electronic newsletters, calendars, Facebook pages, Twitter accounts, meetings, postcards, posters, after church announcements. You know, what kind of information is best used in different circumstances? And they go kind of step by step through how they work through a pretty complicated calendar, and then they even created a calendar communication matrix, which I thought was very interesting, where they've kind of plotted the type of communication, the communication tools that are available, and all of that kind of wrapped in by audience. So take a look at it. There's a there'll be a link in the show notes to this particular blog post.
Yeah, I think I'm going to send my husband immediately a link to this calendar communication matrix. I think that's really an excellent way to break things down. Who is the audience, and how often do we need to communicate by what channels? So a real systematic approach to your communication plans there.
Yeah, some of it is just common sense. So obviously when you put something in your church bulletin or you make an after-service announcement, you have a limited audience. So only those people who are in church or both in church and actually listening, that's going to be your audience for that particular event. But if you need a wider spread, then maybe a newsletter is better, or a website or something like that. So it's again, it's not rocket science, but I think it's nicely laid out and makes you think a little bit.
Very good. Next up in community feedback, we had some interesting comments on our Facebook page, Martin. You can get to the Wells Tech Facebook page at facebook.com/WellsTech. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't liked us already, we invite you there and encourage you to like the Wells Tech podcast.
Please like us.
Yeah. Mark Hillman wrote there that Pilgrim Lutheran Church in Minneapolis has posted a video of a Mike Westendorf concert. So you might want to check that out. He gave kudos to Larry McGowan, who apparently is the video force at Pilgrim, and they did an awesome job and put the video out on Vimeo. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, some of our longtime listeners may remember we had Mike Westendorf on the show a while back talking about his music, and he's big into Christian music and the whole independent scene behind that, and certainly would wish him well as he looks like he's on tour a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Made it out to Minnesota. What a place.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we also had some comments hearkening back to our Pacific Northwest road trip when we talked with John Shoesmith up there in the state of Washington. And John and Dan are apparently both in the state of Washington, and they had a little conversation. That's Dan Smith, who said that Wells Tech should have actually come to Washington and done some video. And so they invited us out, Martin, to come to Washington and do some tech reinvigoration out in the Pacific Northwest. So
now
you're up for an actual road trip.
Now the secret's out, because I'm assuming many of our listeners assume we were driving around the country for these interviews.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they were right there believing that.
We'll have to work on that. So
yeah,
if it's all expenses paid, I might be interested. I've never been to Washington. That's one of the – I've been to about 45 states. Our family always took, long driving vacations when we were young. So we've been to most every state. And I grew up in California, but never, ever got to Washington, which is just up the coast a little bit. So
sure.
I'm intrigued. Well, I want to see his lighthouse.
That would be fun.
Yes.
All right. And lastly, we have a few education-oriented links to share. These came to us via the DIGO group for Wells Tech and shared by some of our favorite Wells Tech teachers, Jason Schmidt and Gail Potratz. There are links that we'll include in the show notes to Weather Whiz Kids, Geology for Kids, and Illuminations, which is a math website.
Mm-hmm.
So check those out if you're so inclined.
Very good. And Sally, if somebody wanted to get in touch with us, how would they do that?
Oh, there are many ways. The great place to start is on our blog, our show notes website. It's wellstech.wells.net, and we have links to all these other ways to contact us posted there. But if you want to email us, we're wellstech@wells.net. You can call and leave us a voicemail. We'd love to include your voice on our podcast. It's 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357, and you can follow us on Twitter add a Wells Tech tag to Delicious or Digo, and even join the Wells Tech listserv and communicate with a wide audience of Wells Tech listeners who are there to answer your tech questions. So check all that out on our show notes website.
We'd love to have you join us. Join the conversation, as we say. Next week, we will go back home, you know, from our travels, kind of get back in the swing of things, and kind of take a retrospective look at our travels over the course of the summer and hit some of the highlights and maybe talk about some of those special moments that we had in talking to all the great people across the Synod. And, of course, we will return with some of our regular segments on the show, ministry resources and tech news. I'm looking forward to that. A lot of things happened this summer, and things are just getting heated up in a lot of different areas with new tablets coming out and all kinds of things probably in the hopper for the holiday season as well.
So, lots to look forward to. It's always great to go on vacation. Sometimes it's hard to come back, mm-hmm. but we are anxious to come back to our regular routine on the Wells Tech podcast and have lots of good stuff in store for you. So please join us again.
And Sally is working diligently at making a book selection, I hear. Right, Sally?
No pressure.
I promised that it was your turn to pick, and it's all yours.
Yep. We're zeroing in on a brand new book for our reading pleasure.
It'll probably be education-focused, we're thinking, at this point.
Yeah.
So. All right. Let's close the show with the music of Kevin Lersch, When Love is Found, from his album Abide With Me. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really do appreciate you tuning in each week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Song. Praise God for